This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 30, Pressure and Pre-Season. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the idea of practicing under pressure. How can you make your nets into a high performance zone where batting under pressure feels about the same as you would be feeling in a match? We also talk about pre-season and off-season practice and what you can do to start the season really well as a batsman. And we talk about the back foot drop and the front foot block. Is it actually any good? Listen to the show to find out the opinions of the panel. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket, no matter who you are and no matter where you are. If you want to improve your batting, your bowling, your fielding, or your coaching of others in those areas, then this is the half hour that you need to listen to every week. My name's David Hinchliffe. I'll look after things here. And this week, we have a slightly unusual way of doing things. First of all, I'm joined, as I always am, by the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
How are you? You all right?
Very good. Thanks very much. Yep. And secondly, although he's not here right at this second, we will be joined later in the show by the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School, Sam Lavery. We've pre-recorded some questions with Lavers, so he will be joining us on the show a little bit later on. But for now, Gareth, it's just me and you.
Splendid.
Okay, and we're going to be talking a little bit about practicing under pressure. First part of the show. And the reason why I was thinking about that is because my own team had a little bit of a problem with a run chase at the weekend. And so we were thinking about how we could get our nets, a little bit more pressure on our net situation. The problem being, because we're in Scotland, of course, it's pretty much always raining. So the indoor nets are what's the only thing that's available to us. And we're very grateful that we've got a roof on our nets here. But what that means is that you could be smashing the ball around in nets, no bother at all, and be thinking you're doing really well. When in fact, what's really happening is, like you are in the middle, you need to go at six and over, and then you hit three balls, three lovely drives, and they all go straight to cover or extra cover. And then you're feeling under pressure, and then you try and smash one over deep mid-wicket and end up getting out. So, but there's no pressure in the net, because as far as you're concerned, you're hitting the ball really well. As people often say, I'm hitting them really well in nets, I can't understand what's going wrong. So, Gareth, what I was hoping for from you was some ideas of getting those, when you're in that net situation, of replicating that pressure that you feel in some way when you're out in the middle and you need to score at 5.5 and over and you keep hitting the ball to fielders.
Well, the best way of doing it to me is to have scenario nets. And they take practice, David, because people get better at judging angles. And when I say people, not just the bowlers and the batters, but the coaches get better at judging the angles and the paces that the ball goes off of a bat. And we've got to a stage now at school in our winter program when we're practicing indoors and we're having nets that we have no arguments between batters and bowlers because they've got so good at judging where the ball's gone in relation to the perceived field. And the thing that's made the biggest difference to us is that we bought, a couple of years ago, we bought a magnetic whiteboard that we put up on the wall. And the bowlers set the field. And that whiteboard is square of the wicket on the offside of the batter. So they can see it at all times. So when they're hitting the ball and, you know, those age-old conversations of that's four and then the bowler going, no, that's out. The batter has got a much better idea. So it's a bit like, I mean, I sort of stole the idea off of Pitch Vision because obviously one of our halls that we've got has got Pitch Vision in and we can do that, you know, on the software, which is fantastic. But the other hall, we haven't got that in. So we've tried to make a very basic Pitch Vision with field placings, with magnetic little counters that can move around. And of course, throughout an over, then the bowler can come, right, because you've done that or because the match situation's this, I'm going to put this person there and put this person there. And the batter can see it and the pair of batters can see it. The other thing I think is really important is to get people batting in pairs as well. So they get used to running between the wickets. And I've said this for years, and I know we've had lots of conversations around how we develop the capacity to run between the wickets really well too, and to build up partnerships, because generally they're only ever built up, and we only ever practice running between the wickets when we're outside playing in a game situation, or if we're lucky enough, which you're obviously not with the weather that you've experienced recently, of getting middle practices. And they're not easy to do, because groundsmen have got to prepare pitches for you and whatever. So if you can get two batters batting together, guys bowling individual overs, setting their fields on a magnetic whiteboard, or if you've got the ability to link an iPad up to a plasma screen on the side of a wall outside of a net with one of the apps that you can draw fields on and all that sort of thing, then do it. Just try and make it as real as possible. And what you'll find is initially you'll still have those conversations where you'll be an argument between a batter and a bowler. But over time, the skills develop in people assessing what is what. And it took us probably about 2 or 3 months of really working hard at this in every session that we had. And we do it within our small groups as well. And then all of a sudden it starts to click. And it's a huge benefit, because people get used to playing under pressure all of the time, rather than having those silly conversations where somebody says, oh, that's gone out of the park. And then somebody else says, well, actually it's caught 10 yards off the fence or whatever. Or that went, you know, that's four. No, it was stopped at cover. So without something like pitch vision, that's been the best way that we've been able to do it. It's relatively inexpensive, and it's made a huge difference to the way that the guys are now playing cricket.
Yeah, it is challenging, isn't it, when you get one person saying one thing and one person saying another, and then as the coach you make your adjudication, and whoever you make your adjudication towards, the other one goes, oh well, I don't agree with that, and then you carry on, and then you kind of, it's easy to lose that intensity, isn't it? And then people end up, every third ball, if they're batting in pairs, every third ball they just run anyway. And it can, unless there's very good focus, it can be difficult. And that's one of the things that I've been trying to really encourage, is let's stay focused. You know, let's not just bowl and bat and then have your 10 minutes and then come out and go, did I get anything from that? Try and focus on exactly what you're trying to do when you're in there. One of the things that I tried was to set some target areas. So rather than set fields, we have tried that as well. And it sounds like we need a bit more work towards that. But one of the things that I tried was to set some target areas, to say, these are the two areas that you can score runs through. How are you going to hit the ball through these target areas? And that focuses the mind as well, because you can play a lovely cover drive and you don't get anything for that, because you haven't set up a target area in that space. And so that works quite well, but again, it's slightly false. It's not quite the same, because you've only got two target areas, so that's the only two areas that you're gonna, you know, you get a point for. Anywhere you hit it anywhere else, that you might have played a nice shot, but it you don't get a point for it. So that's just trying to rack up the pressure of saying how many points you can get during your session.
Completely right, and it's a fantastic way to go. Other ways of doing it is to have a 10-point net, which I've written about previously, which is you give people bonus and minus points depending on what's happened. And when somebody's lost 10 points, then that's the end of their net. And So if you get out, if you nick off, or if you get bowled, or if you get LBW, or if you just chip one up in the air, then that's minus 5. If you get hit on the pad, so say an off-spinner's bowling to a right-hander and he spins one back and it hits him outside the line of off-stump, and you lose a point. You lose a point for playing and missing. So, you know, shot selection comes into play as well. But you can pick up points by having target areas. So one of the target areas that we have is to hit straight down the ground off of the spinner over the top. So if you clear the bowling machine, if we're doing a bowling machine work, or if we clear the bowler and it goes dead straight, then you pick up two positive runs. And if you hit the ball square of the wicket either side with enough pace to get to the boundary, irrespective of where the fielder was going to be standing or not, if it's got enough pace to reach the boundary, then you pick up a bonus point. And what you find there is that people value their wicket, but they also look to score. Another thing you can do is, if you're batting in pairs, as I talked about earlier, you can have a drop run, and a drop run gives you a two runs towards the partnership. So it's a really good way of getting people to really switch on, which is exactly what you're talking about with your target areas, getting people to switch on and building up some pressure. Because you need to have a consequence for non-performance, or because that is the game, isn't it? You know, you go out into the middle, if you play with no respect for what's going on around you and you nick off first ball, your consequence is you walk back, your pride's dented, you haven't contributed to the team. And you need to replicate that in practice, not all of the time, but certainly half the time, or maybe even a bit more, depending on what you're trying to achieve. It's really valuable to do that, and our best practices inevitably have a consequence which is replicated, and trying to replicate match pressure, and as a consequence of that type of stuff happening over a longer period of time, you start to see changes in behaviour when people go out on the pitch, which is exactly what we're looking for.
The other challenge in this area is trying to match up the standards of the players with each other. I think especially in a club situation, you might get some bowlers who aren't quite as good, and then the batsman feels like the pressure's off because he's getting bad balls, you know, every third ball or every fourth ball or something like that. And then when he goes out to play in a match, he's going to get a lot fewer bad balls, and the bowling's probably going to be a little, you know, it's going to be turning more if it's a spinner, or it's going to be a bit quicker if it's a seam bowler. So that's another challenge, is to, I think, with all of these things, to keep the pressure on, you need to match the standards of the bowlers to the batsmen as close as you can.
Yeah, you've got two options, I think. You're absolutely right. That is one of the ways you can do it. The other thing is to change the context of a scenario. So if you've got somebody who is a top player and he's batting against somebody who is maybe one of your second-team bowlers or a youngster that's coming up, if you set the scenario, therefore, to be the batter's got to score 26 off of two overs, which is, you know, it's a big ask against anybody that you're bowling against. All of a sudden, what you're doing is you're providing quite a big target for that batter to go against somebody who's a lesser bowler. But also, you're keeping the lesser bowler interested, because if a lesser bowler happens to go for 15 and then get the wicket, then he's done his job as well. So I think you not just shift and make sure that you're pairing up the right players, but if you aren't in a situation, that optimal situation of being able to pair up equal standard of players, because that is a blooming hard thing to do, isn't it, when you've got, you know, 15, 20 people around. You can mix the context of a session around as well, so you inspire and motivate the batter to do well, or the bowler to do well, and equally you keep the lesser player in the game as well, because that does happen in a game of cricket as well. I mean, I was watching a game last night where, incidentally, the grandson of Michael, Colin Cowdery, was bowling, and that's very much his second suit. You know, he's not a great bowler, Fabian. He's a useful bowler in short format cricket, because he mixes it up heaps when he bowls. He's not easy to line up. He hasn't got a destructive ball, but he comes on and he goes for a few, but he takes a few wickets as well. And I'm sure throughout his career of bowling, he's developed that through bowling against some players that are much better batters than he is as a bowler. But the context is that he's only got to get it right once, or they've got to get it wrong once, and all of a sudden he's done a job for the team. And that's realistic. So if we can recreate those contexts within a game, in a practice session, then, you know, you're preparing people and inspiring people without having necessarily to stick them up against somebody who's exactly the same quality of player as themselves.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. That's three questions, and Gareth, it's over to you completely this week. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that you want to say. So here come the questions. First question. Train the things you can control, ignore the things you can't.
Yes.
Second question. Play more than you train.
No.
Third question. City franchises are a good idea for English 2020.
Yes.
It's time now for the questions part of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. In this section on the show, we answer your questions. A couple of questions that have been sent in. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions in to coach@pitchvision.com. And that is exactly what Bradley's done. And Bradley says, I recently bought Ian Ponce Ultimate Pace Secrets. He talks about the back foot drop and front foot block to improve pace and accuracy as a fast bowler. I've not heard any other opinions from other coaches about whether this works, and I'd be keen to hear about your opinions about the technique. Does it work? Is it credible? And if so, should I use it with my 14-year-old son, who is a fast bowler?
I, too, are fairly used to, or new to this. I've read through all of the books. I've asked lots of questions. I've looked at videos. I've studied different disciplines. And I think there is a lot in it, to be honest with you. I think it's something that we see a number of bowlers do around the world, but not all of them. So, for example, a Mitchell Johnson would have a better back foot drop than a front foot block, yet he can still get the ball down the other end. Jimmy Anderson does both pretty well. Stuart Broad does both pretty well. But you don't need to have them both in place to be able to be at the top of your game. But it definitely helps, I think. And certainly with a 14-year-old boy, I'd be definitely having a go at trying to get the back foot drop or the back leg drop and the front foot block in. Because if you can get that foundation in at the beginning of their bowling development and their formative years, then it's going to stand them in very, very good stead. So I'm a big fan of it, I have to say, as a starting point of the kinetic chain, as a starting point for building a foundation on the bottom half of the body. I think at the age of 14, you're very much in those years of your life where you can build up a really good base, take a bit of time, get there at some point in the next couple of years, and it's going to lay you in pretty good stead to produce some good power going up through the kinetic chain into the back of a ball when you're older and stronger. So we're doing a lot of it at school at the moment because it just makes total sense to me. However, you watch the Ashes, which I'm sure we will do over the course of the next few days, and you'll see people that don't do that, and you'll see people who don't block particularly well on their front leg. But it doesn't mean to say that if they had the option at the age of 14 of putting in a stronger foundation with their understanding of how the body and the kinetic chain work, they wouldn't go back and do that if they had a little TARDIS. So I think it's a good thing, and I'm a big fan of it.
How late labours would you say you could produce this into a young bowler before you start thinking, well, you know, he's got it in, he's going another way now, so it's probably a bit late for him?
It's a good question, that, because there are lots of elements of cricket where people start to get to a stage where they've established something, they've established a method of batting or bowling or whatever it might be, and they kind of want to stick to it, and they feel that they're beyond the point of no return, aren't they, to a degree where they think, I'm too old, I've done this too many times to start changing. Just in reference to Ponty, though, in his book, actually, one of the forwards from memory, because I had a look through it again the other day, one of the forwards from memory is by Ronnie Irani, and he said that he started to do these things when he started working with Ponty a little bit, which was actually right at the back end of his career. And Ronnie Irani's career went on long enough, so you can imagine how old he was by that stage and how many balls he'd bowled at that stage of his life. So if he's still looking to introduce things well into his 30s, when he's bowling, and he said he's had some benefit from changing, then it sounds like there's no reason not to try and look at some of the options. Again, when we're trying to change anything or improve something, we've got to be aware of what's the benefit against, what's the positive and what are the negatives. And if you're at a stage of career where you're moving into your last couple of seasons, or you're only playing very, very occasionally, or you're not able to train a lot, then you have to be aware of how much improvement or development you can make in the time available you have, and how much benefit it's going to offer you. So in Ronnie Irani's case, he obviously felt that he had a good opportunity, and he was able to train every day throughout winter and try and introduce some adaptations to the way he was going to bowl, and he felt that it worked for him. But if you're able to train once a week, or you're not really able to get to training a great deal, then trying to change things when you're bowling are going to be very, very tough. So it's always going to be a horses for courses situation, but I don't see any reason that you can't try and introduce new things and add new things to the way you bat or you bowl, almost regardless of how old you are.
I think it was brilliant for Ronnie because he actually got a couple of balls out at about 60 miles an hour after he'd got that in place. So, you know, which was quality. But it is a good example. I'm taking the mickey out of Ronnie, obviously, and as he's done that throughout my playing career from various positions on the pitch, I can get my own back in a more public domain, so that's good. And I'm sure he could talk on the radio about me if he wanted to, but he probably wouldn't waste his breath. So, no, I think the Ronnie one's a good example. And going back to your points there, Sam, it's about the need and the want of that player to want to make any change. So, for example, Dennis Lilly, you know, he'd got heaps of test wickets, had an injury and forced himself into the change. But sometimes it doesn't have to be an injury. It could be that you've got a six-month period. You want to get better. You want to extend your career. You want to get another contract towards the end of your career. It could be at any stage in your life, really. And I was with somebody yesterday who used to open the bowling for Ireland, who has now turned to off-spin. He's not overly old, but his knees have worn out a bit, and he's changed his game, and he's now bowling off-spin, and he's doing that pretty well at club level. But he's worked hard at it. You know, it's not something that he's just going, I think I'll bowl off-spin now. He didn't want to embarrass himself, and he went away and worked at it, and he worked independently, and then he bought it into some nets and some practices against some of the kids he was coaching, and then he took it into the local league cricket, and he's doing a reasonable job for his side now, and it's extending his career and doing something he wants to do, which is play cricket for as long as possible. So I think the player's got to want to do it, and in Ronnie's case he wanted to get a performance gain. In Dennis Lilly's case, he wanted to get back on the park, and at the time stress fractures were seen as career ending, and he decided that he wanted to do something about it because he wasn't ready to end his career at that point. And he came back as a better bowler and you know, became an absolute legend of a game as a result. So it's not about age solely. I think there's a benefit to doing these things, these foundations, these fundamentals for fast bowling at a young age. And obviously with your son now being 14, Bradley, I think it's a great opportunity to get that stuff in. So big fan. Give it a go. I'd like to say to you, combine some of the Stephen Jones drills that he does with the Ponty drills, and you won't go too far wrong in giving a foundation for good performance going forward.
The next question is from someone that I'm sure it's not his real name. It's India Cricket 12. Maybe it is. You know what the kids are like these days. And India Cricket 12, or I'm just going to call him 12 from now on, says, "Hi, I'm a batsman that bats around three or four in the batting order. I was wondering what types of training I need to do in the off-season to make sure that I start the cricket season good." So how can you start the cricket season good?
I think it's obviously it's quite an open question. And first of all, your own interpretation of what good is or what doing well is up to you. But I think if you can, first of all, have in the back of your mind that whatever plan you put in place, you're not going to have a guarantee. All you can do is increase your chances. So we're not going to give you any guarantees that doing this or training this way or training this hard is going to make you good and it's going to give you success. But all you can do is you can increase your chances by covering as many bases as you can and giving as much attention to detail as possible. So first of all, think about the role you're playing in the side. Now, obviously, as a top order batter, batting three or four, you're in a position where you could be doing a number of different things. So you could be walking out, and your first ball could be three balls into the game, and you're facing the opening bowler, and it's swinging around corners. Or the first ball could be 50 overs into the game, or 40 overs in the second innings, and you've got a wrist spinner on, and it's turning square. So first thing you've got to be aware of is you need a range of skills. So you're going to have a range of skills that can counter opening bowlers, seamers bowling in the middle of the innings, spinners bowling when it's not turning, spinners bowling when it is turning. So you've got to have a good range of attacking and defensive skills, and you've got to be equipped to face any bowler you have. So try and structure your training so that you're working against, or you're building up a method against different types of bowlers and different types of scenarios. So you've got as many different facets to your game as you can possibly have. Now, you might be able to think of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different scenarios that you're going to play, and maybe more. And through the period of a winter, you'll very quickly see that you'll actually run out of time quite quickly if every session is achieving something. So if you can make sure that every session you're looking to do is going to achieve something that's going to help you in one of those scenarios, you'll very quickly find that you can fill up your winter training program with lots and lots of different things. Obviously, when you try something, you don't want to necessarily just move on for it and just complete that and tick a box and say, right, I've done that type of session. I've practiced against a big turning ball or a swinging ball or attacking a flat wicket or whatever it might be. You obviously want to make sure that you've had some success and you've got your head around how you can perform in that kind of scenario. So make sure you do spend a bit of time and you don't necessarily move on until you're comfortable with moving on. But you're probably better off making sure that rather than doing 50 things in the winter, you get 6 or 7 things done really, really well. And then again, next year, if you have the same passion to improve and to learn about your game, you can maybe add another 2 or 3 things year by year. But I would just try and give yourself some structure of what type of things you want to do, and then try and make sure you stick to them and have a bit of discipline to your practice throughout the winter.
One of the best stories that I've heard about the off-season and trying to improve your game, there was this guy who played a long time ago now, but every winter he would say to himself, if he wasn't going off on tour or playing overseas or whatever, he'd say to himself, right, I'm going to develop one more shot than I had last year. So he'd have a look at his game, just like Sam has suggested, and he'd say, am I weaker against pace or am I weaker against spin? What's my back foot game like? And he'd choose one shot. And for the first 3 months of that winter period, or any gap that he had over a decent length of time, he would just look to master one cricket shot. 1 year it was hitting it over the top of mid off and mid on, so he could push the fielders back. Another year it was playing sweeps. Another year it was developing a hook shot, so he could counteract some of the faster bowlers that he was going to be playing against. And over the course of the years of his career, he therefore had a number of different scoring shots and a number of different options against all types of bowling that he accumulated over the course of his career. That bloke's name was Colin Cowdery, and he scored 7,624 runs in Test cricket, 42,719 runs in first class cricket, and scored over 100 first class hundreds. But it was a very simplistic approach to the way that he used his off periods to try and develop one particular shot and just focused all of his energies on it, because his drive shot and his cut shot that he'd mastered during his formative years of growing were never going to go away. They were always going to be in the locker. If he could keep adding to it year on year, then he'd go all right. And by the end of his career, or the latter part of his career, he was pretty much the complete batter.
And that was actually mirrored by Mike Hussey as well. I did exactly the same thing. And he, obviously, we all know how he ended up. He got, well, he wouldn't have had the same number of test hundreds in the end. But, I mean, being a late starter to test cricket, but same method. Mastering one new thing every year. And that takes you to if you master one thing every year and there are 15 or 20 things to master, it's pretty common sense that that'll take you up to 6,500 test runs or whatever you got.
Good knowledge as well, Gareth, on the stats.
Yeah, this is amazing how much I can just keep all those numbers straight in my head and they're forever etched, or the fact that I've just gone to Wikipedia.
It's time now for the soapbox. That is 1 minute on the clock and 1 minute of speaking from one of the members of the team who can talk about anything they like without any interruption. This week it's Mark Garraway. So, Gareth, over to you for the soapbox.
I've been watching a thing about Yorkshire cricket on Sky Sports recently, where they follow the team around, the captain being coach being Jason Gillespie, Andrew Gale, the captain, and they follow the team around throughout their season. It's been brilliant viewing. It's 25 minutes, 30 minutes of watching every now and again. And yesterday they were going into a phase of cricket where it was the middle of a season, people were beginning to get a bit tired, and there was a few moans and groans, and players were in particular moaning about the pace of pitches and saying, oh, you can't play on this, you can't play your shots on that. And Jason Gillespie pulled his team in and he just said, I've had enough of it. Because if every time we get on a pitch that doesn't do what we want it to do, or it isn't, like playing at the Wacker, we moan about it being slow. Both the bowlers moan and the batters moan. And all you're doing is you're training your brain to give yourself a reason to fail. You're saying that failure on a slow wicket is fine, and you're training yourself and conditioning yourself to fail because you're not applying yourselves possibly, optimally. And what I loved about it was it was very short, it was very sharp, but he made sure that everybody knew that moaning about suboptimal practice conditions or match conditions isn't going to get you anywhere. And he actually said, and if anybody does it from now on, I will drop you for somebody who doesn't do that. They might not be as good a player as you, they might not give me as many runs as wickets, but I will drop you for that player who doesn't moan and just gets on with it. Obviously, the get on with it bit I resonated quite significantly with me, but I thought it was wonderful to hear it from such a great coach and a great player in his own right.
And that is the end of the show for another week. We are going to head off in a moment. Before we do, we're just going to decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had two questions, one from 12, who had some questions about what he needs to do in the off-season to help his batting, and Bradley's question about the back foot drop and the front foot block from Ian Pont. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Two great questions again. I think there's a lot of stuff that Ponty's put out there in both books and stuff that's featured on our site as well. That I'm sure Bradley's tapping into anyway. So I'm going to go with 12 this week. I think 12's question was an open one, but I think Sam answered it brilliantly. And then hopefully the Colin Cowdery thing has helped to define the way you go about your business next time an off-season comes along.
Yeah, congratulations to you, 12. And if you're listening to the show and you're not 12, and you're thinking to yourself, well, I wouldn't mind a bit of that and get my question answered and possibly win that prize of the online coaching course, Gareth, how would somebody do that to get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Our social media presence is also available. We are on Twitter at pitchvisionacad, and you can also find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do so by subscribing in your favourite podcast app. Just to do a search for us in whatever you've got there on your phone or your tablet or your computer, and you'll find us in there. Click on the subscribe button. And if you want to find the show notes or stream the show online, you can use your computer to visit pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link at the top, and you've got all the show notes in there. You've got ways to subscribe, and you've got a little button that you can click on to stream the show directly off the website if you want to do it that way. Thanks very much to Lavers for managing to record his answers to his questions so efficiently. And we'll be back to the show as normal next week. Until then, we hope you have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.